From Memphis, Tennessee, that's Mr. Blues himself, Benny Ross Hank Crawford Jr. Okay? Just in case you want to know his whole name, Benny Ross Hank Crawford Jr. on alto sax with the title track from his 1969 album titled Hank Crawford, Mr. Blues. We also have some pretty interesting sidemen, Wendell Harrison on tenor, Lonnie Shaw and Howard Johnson on baritone sax, John Hunt and Fielder Floyd on trumpet, and Sonny Forrest on guitar. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, another day in paradise, I tell you. President Trump vowed yesterday to take some kind of, quote, responsibility, unquote, for helping to bring the murderous chaos in war-torn Syria to an end. What that responsibility will be, Trump wouldn't say. But he made it clear that the task was actually President Barack Obama's. And Obama, he said, did nothing. So this is his continuing theme of developing a program, an agenda for his administration based entirely on fighting, as I had said in an earlier program, fighting the ghost of Barack Obama. As you know, a chemical weapons attack on Tuesday in northern Syria has claimed the lives of at least 86 people, most of them women and children, says the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Syria is mired in a six-year, going on seven now, multi-party civil war, including invading ISIS forces, whose principal target has been the country's president, Bashar al-Assad, and his regime. The world community of nations is seeking consensus on how to end the carnage in Syria and to save lives. It's looking to the United States, which so far has not committed itself to direct military action. So now we have Trump and Assad on the brink. Trump is being looked at now to make a definitive statement as to what the United States would do. President Obama literally just kind of sidestepped the issue for all kinds of reasons. But primarily, I think it was because he just did not want another war on his hands. His hands were filled at the time with these covert military actions that the United States was involved in at the time. And, you know, the memory of the disastrous U.S. involvement in Iraq is just not too far away. So, for whatever reasons, Barack Obama did not really do very much with respect to Syria in a direct way, perhaps covertly, but certainly not in a direct way. So let's listen to Donald Trump with his erudite self explain what motivated his change of heart, and what motivated his thinking about this business of responsibility for doing something about the atrocities in Syria.
At a joint press conference in the Rose Garden, he suggested there should be retaliation.
These heinous actions by the Assad regime cannot be tolerated.
In the past, again and again, Donald Trump said the U.S. should not get involved, tweeting, "Syria is not our problem," when President Obama proposed protecting civilians. And after Assad's massive chemical weapons attack in 2013, he tweeted, "Do not attack Syria, fix USA," adding, "If you do, many bad things will happen, and from that fight, the U.S. gets nothing." But now the president says these horrific images have changed his views on the Assad regime. Innocent civilians suffering from this week's attack. More than 80 dead.
Here a father clutches his twin 9-month-old babies, both of them killed. Today at the White House, talk of a changed Syria policy.
Well, I do change, and I am flexible, and I'm proud of that flexibility. And I will tell you, that attack on children yesterday had a big impact on me. Big impact. And it's very, very possible. And I will tell you, it's already happened, that my attitude toward Syria and Assad has changed very much.
Trump blames President Obama for the humanitarian crisis, but acknowledges it's now his challenge to solve.
I now have responsibility, and I will have that responsibility and carry it very proudly. I will tell you that. It is now my responsibility.
Can I just quickly ask you if the chemical attack crosses a red line for you?
It crossed a lot of lines for me. When you kill innocent children, innocent babies, babies, little babies, with a chemical gas that is so lethal, people were shocked to hear what gas it was. That crosses many, many lines, beyond the red line, many, many lines.
But he gave no indication of what he may do.
Well, one of the things I think you've noticed about me is, militarily, I don't like to say where I'm going and what I'm doing. I'm not saying I'm doing anything one way or the other, but I'm certainly not going to be telling you.
Today, King Abdullah made it clear the world is looking to President Trump.
I believe under your leadership, we will be able to unravel this very complicated situation.
And the president, while again blaming his predecessor, is promising to take action.
The world is a mess. I inherited a mess. We're going to fix it. We're going to fix it. And John.
Well, there you go. This was a report filed by ABC News yesterday. The position by Donald Trump is, we don't know what he's going to do. And he gave himself a lot of flexibility, if you notice that, and in fact touted his flexibility as one of his best points. He's a very flexible guy. So that even though the reporter filed a long list of reasons that Trump originally had said, you know, don't get involved, leave it alone, let them fix it, instead concentrate on the United States. And this was the advice that he officially gave the Obama administration. He faulted Obama, as a matter of fact, because one of the things that he did do, if he didn't do anything overtly, anything else overtly, there was this issue of trying to issue humanitarian help so that the refugees, there are more refugees now outside of Syria than there are Syrians actually alive. This is how devastating this war has been. And it is not a straightforward, cut-and-dried war. It is an extremely complicated war. But the help that was offered from the United States was of a humanitarian nature, not military, but humanitarian. So when Trump says yesterday he will assume responsibility, but he's not saying what that would actually be. He's going to be flexible. He's a flexible guy. And he says all this because actually they have no plan. Again, you know, this is how they cover up the fact that you have no plan. One would have imagined that with this war entering its sixth year, right? Seventh year. The war is entering its seventh year. If you were a major critic and you had in mind at some point you're going to run for president, you would assemble a group of people and begin to put in place some kind of a working idea of a plan. But of course, this has happened, and it now forces Donald Trump to react. He deflects any kind of accountability for the fact that he has no plan. He has no plan. And therefore, you use the plan that you've got. And the plan you have is to beat up on Barack Obama, saying, what a mess. He created such a mess. And I've inherited this horrible mess. But I'm going to fix it because I'm Donald Trump. But we need to start asking some questions about the situation itself. This chemical attack and the reports of the chemical attack are kind of being left unchallenged. It is just accepted that this attack was initiated by Assad and his regime, and not through, I mean, I haven't heard of any report in the mainstream media, certainly, questioning, even as they present information, quote unquote, about this attack. There is no doubt. They leave no room for doubt as to who did this. They leave no room for doubt about what exactly were the chemicals used. What was the nature of this chemical attack? And it would seem to me that while the world community of nations is busy basically condemning the Assad regime and laying blame for the attack on the Assad regime, we have no, at least I haven't read of any, no definitive reports that in fact that is true. No investigations have led definitively to the conclusion that Assad was the person responsible for directing this attack. But it is particularly surprising, I'm talking about the U.S. media, that we have a set of circumstances laid out. We are supposed to accept them. We aren't supposed to ask any questions. We aren't supposed to extend the argument to include recent history or context or anything. And that is why my initial reaction to things like this most often or almost always is to just wait for some kind of credible report that lets us know it's possible that the information, because all of the news people are depending on their sources, and their sources usually are depending on the generosity, if you will, of official sources. And we know that that is totally biased information. We talked not too long ago about propaganda. Propaganda is information. It could either be used in a good way or in a very bad way. Right now, we ought to be considering the fact that even as war is contemplated, it is quite possible the country can go to war. Even with that very stark reality, we have no sense of confidence that the information that we have about a possible intended action by the government to go to war, and it, you know, it's just got $54 billion more from Trump to boost its military capacity. We have to trust that the information is correct. And the information is being disseminated to the media, and the media in turn will disseminate it to us. There is no report that I have seen so far from the media in which you have a direct source, a direct report, direct evidence on the ground that gives some credibility to the claim that this chemical attack was done by the Assad regime. We have a war. I mean, just use your sense of logic. You have a war involving multiple parties. Multiple parties. Syria has become a kind of basket case where all kinds of people are fighting for all kinds of reasons, including people who have invaded the country and have been perpetrating acts of terrorism. I mean, just incredible, heinous acts. And yet, you listen to the media account of this, the reports that they're filing, and they let it stand as a given that the most important thing about their report is that they have no definitive facts. All of their information is coming from some governmental source or the other. Now, I am not suggesting that it is totally impossible that Assad would be involved. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that we, in light of our history with reports of these kinds of things, we have to be very, very careful about the use of propaganda, which has only one purpose, and that is to shape the minds of the people in such a way as to accept the conduct, even if it is atrocious, but the conduct of the government. Because what Trump just said, I inherited a mess. Obama didn't do a thing. By which he meant, Obama didn't obliterate Assad and anybody else who was in the way of a peaceful Syria. He didn't do that job. I don't have any plans, you know, laid out for this scenario, but it's a good thing, it's a good time, and a good tactic to tell the people it's Obama I'm actually fighting. I'm here to clean up his crap. He left me with this awful assignment. But I will fix it. You know how to read these words. I will fix it. It's as close as we've gotten so far to a declaration of war. I will fix it. Not only will I fix it, you will support me in whatever action I take in Syria. Because everybody is in agreement that the bad guy here is Bashar al-Assad. And it's time we just get him out, take him out, as they are likely to say. You see how it works? Very subtle. And part of what we heard in this report were Trump's words in the presence of King Abdullah of Jordan. He and his wife, the Queen, were guests of the U.S. government yesterday. So that means that we have a prop. We have a physical prop of a king, a moderate king, supposedly, of Jordan, which is smack in the middle geographically of all of this craziness. So it lends credence to the credibility of Donald Trump. These things are not done accidentally. So I was hoping and praying that we get extensive conversations because they are reporting, and it's awful. The chemical attacks, we've seen them before. We've seen them in India with the Bhopal plant that killed hundreds of people. We've seen all kinds. We've seen it in Vietnam. That famous picture of that little girl running stark naked down the street. Her clothes presumably burned off of her body. We get it with the chemical warfare because the United States has conducted enough chemical warfare for us to have an idea of the various kinds of chemical warfare. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, chemical warfare. We've seen this before. Vietnam, we've seen it. Napalm, Agent Orange. We are accustomed to seeing the use, the illegal and criminal use of chemical warfare by the United States in various parts of the world. People's water supply poisoned. Agent Orange, the soldiers coming back. We get it. Chemical warfare is not pretty. The chemicals that you gave Saddam Hussein. We've seen that. But none of the reports suggest that the United States itself has a long and documented history of chemical warfare. And even right here in the United States, we have had chemical warfare against citizens, against fellow Americans, in experimentations and so forth. We've seen that. So I was waiting to see reports that said, based on that, we need to question the reports coming out of government-influenced media services that this definitely, not only was it, we confirmed it was a chemical attack, but more so, we are dead certain it was conducted at the direction of Bashar al-Assad. Haven't seen it yet. But you know, all is not lost. All is not lost at all. I want to share with you a program that I watched just yesterday, and it's the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Ron Paul being the father of Rand Paul, a libertarian, right of center, and people might use the blanket term, a conservative leaning individual. I want to share with you the thinking. Now, you know, conservatives and libertarians are not into making a lot of, you know, drawing a lot of attention to themselves. They don't want open warfare with the government. But they do have a point of view about the role of government. And so they see the operations of government always up against its professed role. I want to share with you a large chunk of the program I saw yesterday with Ron Paul as host and co-host Daniel McAdams. Just listen, and we'll come back and talk about this.
Yesterday, there was some bombing with possibly gas exposure in Syria, and things have changed. It reminds me sort of weather reports. Well, if you don't like the weather, just wait an hour. You know, you'll get different weather. Well, that's sort of what happens in the Middle East sometimes, that just wait, it'll change. Yeah. And actually, you know, before this episode of possible gas exposure and who did what, things were going along reasonably well for the conditions. You know, Trump says let the Syrians decide who should run their country, and peace talks were breaking out, and Al-Qaeda and ISIS were on the run, on maybe defeated. So it was like, you know, in spite of their problems with this foreign policy, it looked like there was some benefit, but it looks like maybe somebody didn't like that, so there had to be an episode. And the blame now is that we can't let that happen because it looks like it might benefit Assad. So Assad, they claim, now went and released gas to kill a bunch of people. But, Daniel, we might not have much of a job here today because I looked at the New York Times to find out, to get the explanation, and they said, worst chemical attack in years in Syria. U.S. blames Assad. So it's all over and done with. But not quite so easy, is it? What happened 4 years ago in 2013, you know, this whole thing about crossing the red line, and ever since then, the neocons have been yelling and screaming. Even part of the administration is still yelling and screaming about Assad using poison gases on his people 4 years ago. Not quite true.
Yeah, it was never proven, in fact. And the UN official Carlo Del Ponte said that attack was most likely done by the rebels based on the evidence. But here you have Nikki Haley, U.S. ambassador to the UN, almost as we speak, literally, at the UN Security Council, saying, quote, "We know Assad has used chemical weapons before." It's not true. It has never been proven that he has. He may have. We do know that the rebels have used them. That has been proven.
And who would benefit? It makes no sense, even if you were totally separate from this and take no sides of this, and you were just an analyst. It doesn't make any sense for Assad in these conditions to all of a sudden use poison gases. It's zero. I think it's zero chance that he would have done this, deliberately, and he's doing this now. But we could also go to a famous senator who's an expert on foreign policy, and we could go ask John McCain to explain it, and he found somebody to blame. And I don't know what he has it in for the president. We criticize our president once in a while, and we try to be, you know, balanced and criticize the things we think he's doing that we don't like. But McCain says, blame Trump. It's all Trump's fault because he hasn't been aggressive enough. He's backing off. He wants to have negotiations when you have to get rid of Assad. So he's back in prior to 2011 when the neocons, which are in cahoots with a few allies like Saudi Arabia and Israel, the Sunnis, and the Iranians, you know, they're all, you know, in cahoots together. So therefore, they have to be destroyed.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the fact is, as you point out, we're on the eve of peace talks, literally on the eve of peace talks. Assad has the upper hand in these talks. He's almost, essentially, with his Russian and Iranian allies, wiped Al-Qaeda and ISIS out of the country. So on the verge of this great victory that they've suffered for all these years, he decides, I think I'm going to go out and kill some people with gas. You know, and if he just wanted to kill people, there are a heck of a lot better ways of doing it than using gas, which just guarantees that the entire world community, including your allies, are going to turn against you. As you say, he would have to be the most insane leader probably in the history of the world, a Caligula or something.
Well, you know, the collusion of several groups, and we might throw pro-oil people in and pro-military industrial people that is in this effort to continue wars going on. But I think it's the same group of people we dealt with when we were trying to prevent, you know, the remaking of the Middle East under Bush and his marching in to have a regime change in Afghanistan and Iraq and look at the results there. But they never learned from this. So they just shift gears, go to Libya. If it doesn't work, let's go over now. And maybe they consider they've had a tremendous success in Ukraine or something. But now it's Syria and they're into it. But they're all coming together. And when you look up at what they do, is they do have to get some type of public support for the war. Although they're behind the scenes, the neocons and the deep state, they're making the plans, they rule the day, but they still know that they have to use their propaganda machine to get the people behind them. And I think that is what's going on. They did that in Iraq successfully because people believed Saddam Hussein was a monster. And they sort of forgot about it. The people allow the Congress to keep spending all this money, you know, to remake the Middle East. Keeps getting worse. But a lot of people, you know, hopefully we can make inroads, you know, in the public perceptions of this, that this makes no sense whatsoever to just blindly support this policy. So the interesting thing, of course, and it's very important, is how's Trump going to handle this? You know, the first statement I heard, oh, Assad's a bum, you know, we got to go after him. He was really, really tough. And the next time, it wasn't so tough. So it almost he almost had two answers. It wasn't, you know, no, I don't think it was him. We don't need to escalate. We need to find out more what's going on. It doesn't make any sense that he's done that. So he's sort of in between on this. And it's important. Now, if you go to Haley, you know, and other military people that are in the administration, they're gung-ho sometimes to support the neoconservatives. But it's the neoconservatives who are benefiting tremendously from this because it's derailed the progress that has already been made moving toward a more peaceful settlement in Syria.
Yeah, and the loss of the rebels. But, you know, I think it's the reaction is epitomized by Boris Johnson, who's the UK prime foreign minister. Here's what he said. All evidence points to the Assad regime. In the next sentence, he called for a thorough and international investigation. Well, how do you have all the evidence pointing to someone if you haven't had the investigation yet? And I think it's interesting that the initial stories about this attack came from two sources. One of them is an NGO based in the UK that's not even in Syria. And the other is a U.S.-funded group called the White Helmets, very controversial group because they work very closely with al-Nusra Front in Syria. Both of these groups are paid for by the U.S. and U.K. government. So you, at the very least, would have to be suspicious about these reports. And plus, I've seen pictures that the White Helmets have put up of them handling these people supposedly hit with sarin gas, but they didn't have any protection. And everything I've read about sarin is that it's absorbed through your skin.
Remember the prop they used leading up to the Iraq war of taking babies out of incubators. Yeah. It was all stage, a paid PR firm in the United States using people in the United States to claim that as a story. But you know, McCain actually made fun of the notion when Trump came out with a reasonable statement, let the Syrians decide about this. You know, it's just this whole thing. He says, how can they do it? You know, and he argues that what right do they have to decide their own country? But that would be the argument for why should we be there, you know, even at all? Why wouldn't we let the Libyans and the Syrians and the Iraqis and the Afghans, let them all decide, you know, but that option's not usually on the table. There's another option that they throw out there.
And what a hypocrite he is, because here's the same guy who's screaming about the Russians interfered in our elections. And then he says, oh, no one else is allowed to decide their own.
Right.
But here's another good example, Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Illinois. And this shows that the mentality of many people in Congress. And so people think that these people are statesmen and they're so well-versed. This is what he said. I think there needs to be punishing strikes against the Syrian regime as a result of this. You could hit the command and control centers, cutting Assad off from his military forces. So what he's calling for is literally World War III. And even if it wasn't, even if the Russians stood back and let us do this to bomb and kill the Assad regime, how many thousands and thousands of people would be killed if the U.S. started bombing Damascus over this tragic figure of apparently around 100 people killed in this attack? You're going to have tens of thousands killed in Damascus. This is so irresponsible.
You know, it's always the children that they show it, and then they say that it's Assad. It has nothing to do with our policy. But, you know, the blatant episode leading up or at the time the Iraq war was going on, remember Albright was being questioned, that there was a report out that 500,000 women, children died from our bombing over a 10-year period. We kept bombing and bombing and bombing and destroying infrastructure and all that. And she didn't deny it. She says, well, if that's the cost, it is, we have to have it. So this idea that they can show a child and say that child's being gassed and it was Assad's fault, and therefore we have to bomb everybody and kill a lot more people, then who knows what will happen. See, what they're betting on is those who are shouting that maybe they can just stop the peace talks, but they don't believe our policies will lead to a hot war with Russia. I don't happen to believe it will either, but do you think there's a guarantee that something like that couldn't happen? You know, and even if it doesn't, just destroying what's left of Syria by outside forces, you know, by individuals who were not invited into Syria. You know, there's a few people who are there that have been invited and a few that have not been. And we happen to be on the side of the people who have not been invited in to help bring the peace to Syria.
And, you know, if Kinzinger and people like him get their way, Syria will be ruled by, best case scenario, ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or it'll turn into another Libya. But, you know, people would say, if watching the show right now, they'd say, you guys are just a couple of apologists for Assad. We're not, as you know. The fact is, as you pointed out earlier, we don't believe the lies. And we believe now that we're being told lies like we were in Libya, like we were in Iraq. It has nothing to do with whether we like or dislike Assad or think he's a good guy or a bad guy. It has to do with being lied to.
And this is the reason that, you know, Russia came up with the explanation. They didn't say that they weren't dropping bombs because they're trying to, you know, win the war for Assad. Everybody knows that. But what they're saying is that that they accidentally or they hit a target which had weaponry in it and they had gas in there and that released the gas. That's what the Russians said. For some reason, I don't even think that is the case, even though I have no idea. But if you're looking for a reasonable explanation of it, there's somebody has been involved. If it turns out there's gas, like you say, they don't even know it if there's gas. But if there was gas involved, then it was, you know, probably inspired by some of our sinister forces, because we're always involved. I mean, did we have a change of administrations in Ukraine without NATO and the United States and CIA and special forces? No, that's how it happens. So why would this, which is a significant event, maybe it'll blow over and people forget about it and say, oh, yeah, that's another episode. It might not blow over again, but it just looks like it's not an accidental event, and it looks like it makes no sense that that Assad is ready to commit suicide, you know. And, because they could, you know, United States and the British and other, well, we have a lot of warplanes. We could just destroy the rest of the country. And some of these people act like they would, you know.
And, you know, if he was keen on just killing people, then why is Aleppo, now that the terrorists are out, why is it rebuilding? You know, you see pictures of it rebuilding. Why isn't he in there killing people if that's just what he likes to do? It doesn't make...
It makes no sense whatsoever, but I think it's a reflection of a consequence of our foreign policy, and we shouldn't be surprised. It's a little different this time, but, you know, in time, you know, in a couple weeks or maybe a month or so, or ultimately, it'll be always used for propaganda, although we did get to as close to the truth as conceivable about Assad not using gas 4 years ago. It's still a propaganda tool. Even half of the Trump administration still uses that against Trump. So it's real hard to cancel out these images, and they're still going to say that. So how would you put all this together, and what do you think might happen?
Well, I think you're right. The propaganda value is so strong. Even if a couple weeks down the road doesn't look so much like he did it, it's already established. The one final word that I would, you know, I just, Nikki Haley, I think, is one of the worst people in the administration. Here is just a couple of days after a terrorist attack in Russia in St. Petersburg, and she was at the UN Security Council today saying, how many more children have to die before Russia cares? You know, just after they're victims of this attack, so
it's always awful. Always about the children. Yeah, so
awful.
Well, I'll tell you what, if we really cared, we wouldn't even be in that country, I'll tell you that. I think Trump had it absolutely right. Let the Syrians decide what to do about their government. The Syrian people ought to make the decision. And that's a term that's been used generously by a lot of our leaders. Certainly Woodrow Wilson preached self-determination, but look at the consequence of that mess. And that's why I think that we have to look at a bigger picture than just strategy. You know, whether we bomb here tomorrow, the next day, or we move troops here, do we support this group? It's like interventionism in economic policy. You can't plan the economy through monetary manipulation. And you can't plan to run the world and control the world and bring all the factions together by manipulating particular events. You have to decide what you stand for, preach the lessons at home, set good examples, and don't try to force your views on other people. Don't try to use it, guns and bombs and missiles, and say you do it our way or not. So right now, the president's going to be meeting with the president of China. And I don't think that it should be intimidation. I think it should be a frank discussion. But this idea, do it my way or else, it just won't work. I just don't know why we should give up on the principle of negotiation and diplomacy. If we give up on that, then we're going to have the neoconservatives epitomized by Bill Kristol and Cheney and McCain and Lindsey Graham, the other ones who will be running it. And in many ways, they have a lot of influence. I mean, they're closer to the insiders. They're closer to the deep state, and their message keeps getting out. And this may well be an example of what they can do to reverse any attempt to come up with a peaceful solution. That is why the message of non-interventionism, mind our own business, have a strong national defense, protect liberty here at home. That is the policy that must be used if we are determined to promote the cause of peace and prosperity.
Well, that was host Ron Paul of Ron Paul Liberty Report, the Ron Paul Liberty Report, and co-host Daniel McAdams. I was fascinated by their discussion because for the first time I heard a pretty substantial exposition of what we really ought to be thinking and looking at when we hear these kinds of reports, and this one specifically, which has a history. There's a context. But of course, we, through the media and through the use of propaganda, our views are shaped in such a way that we aren't aware that we are considering very heavy things in total isolation, as if they dropped out of the sky like a stone. Let's take some calls and find out what your reaction is to what we've heard today. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I thought it was a very good example of extending the conversation and tapping into your brain, your sense of logic. Is it as they say it is? What is the proof that things have happened? We just had an extended discussion nationally based on Donald Trump's accusation that Barack Obama and his administration tapped him at this Trump Tower headquarters. And what was the demand? Where's your proof? Where's your proof? Everybody wants to know, where's the proof? Because without it, even the president, they say, has no credibility whatsoever. But here in what we've been listening to, we have people, and again, these are not screaming revolutionaries. These are not people who are way far left. They're saying they see some false flags here, and they're flying high. What do you see, Sean from New York?
Hey, Teresa, how you doing?
Okay, thanks. How about you?
All right. You know, in listening to that report that you just played with Ron Paul, he seems to be the only one that is looking at this thing from a logical, cogent point of view in terms of saying, let's ask all the questions. And, you know, let's not just jump to conclusions as to who did what. And as you stated, he brought in a context of history, of what has happened in the past before, and why we should not be so quick to jump to conclusions with regard to the chemical attack in Syria and blaming Assad. And as you pointed out, and I've also pointed this out also to many of my friends, there are many parties fighting in Syria. So how do we know who did what at any given time? You know, you've got Al-Qaeda, you've got Al-Nusra, you've got ISIS, and you have the Russians, and now, and covertly, the Americans supporting some of these other jihadist groups.
And you have rebel forces.
Right, the rebel forces. That's the thing. Right, we rebel forces that are being supported to try to take down Assad. And another thing people don't tend to ask is, why did this war in Syria start in the first place? And it never goes, nobody ever seems to bring it back to energy. In other words, resources. Basically, this entire war is basically over gas pipelines that they wanted to run through Syria and Assad was not on board with. They wanted to, the United States, Qatar, Saudi Arabia want us to run gas pipelines from Qatar into Europe, and Saudi Arabia into Europe, and it has to pass through Syria. Now, the reason they wanted to do this is to cut the Russians out, because the Russians, as you know, supply gas, natural gas to Europe. So this is what this war is really all about, and that's why I believe that the administration, both previous and now it seems this administration, have always been hell-bent on getting Assad out of the way. Because he's the roadblock to the resources that they can't get their hands on right away.
What, therefore, should people be thinking at this time when the information is now going to come to us in a mm-hmm. torrent?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you a story. When I was in the military back in the 1980s, I never forget this. I was sitting in the in a bar on base with some of my buddies, and there was a Navy SEAL in the bar, and there was a Green Beret. And basically, these guys schooled us on, you know, what was happening in the Middle East and what happens when you hear a lot of these geopolitical international incidents. And the one thing I came away with that both of these guys told me is that when you hear of incidences of like these internationally, don't believe it 90% of the time, because most of the time it's wrong and it didn't happen the way the media is reporting it. It usually happens just the opposite. Now, from that day forth, I've looked at American media, in particular when it reports international incidents, and it paints pictures of other countries' leaders as evil. I've looked at it with a very critical a very critical eye. So when I hear this report, I think people should not jump to conclusions and should ask all the questions.
In other words, don't just believe because they tell you Assad is evil. He's evil. You know, let's find out who else has to gain in this process besides Assad. And there are a lot of other parties in this process that have things to gain, as I just explained before. So when this comes in a torrent, you've got to be able to sift through all the mud that they want to program into your head and just ask the logical question. Is it about resources? Is it about money? Who benefits? So on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Sean, for opening up the discussion today and so profoundly. Thank you. From Tokyo, Yasu, you're on the air.
Greetings to Treef and the most intelligent radio listening audience on the planet, I suspect, from what I hear all the time whenever I tune in.
I think so, too. So, and, yeah, and you were among them.
Well, as long as I'm awake, last time I was completely, really so sleepy and tired, I listened to myself and thought, oh, dear. Anyways, so... yeah, this is clearly similar to all sorts of narratives about continuing the war narrative, but now it seems that Trump owns it. But the really interesting angle that, and you've mentioned some of the, or most of the things that I noted already, such as it's only allegations, but there aren't any independent investigation or there isn't any logical approach, and the similarities to the 2013 UN observers just arriving in time for it to happen. And I think today was it that they're going to have the peace talks. So why would somebody do that to sabotage their own peace talks? But aside from that, it also demonstrates from looking at what the United States is saying is that this administration is so completely schizophrenic or dysfunctional, as well as way far away from their most powerful and influential support base. And by the support base, I mean people like Alex Jones. And people may consider him to be so far right and conspiracy theorist and crazy, but I followed many things that he said, and I can't find some things, but other things he really is right. But many say that he and his audience was instrumental in getting Donald Trump elected. But even this guy is saying that, look, this Syria thing is a distraction and that the deep state or the neocons want you to be involved. And Donald Trump actually calls the host on Alex Jones. So it just, you know, all these things seem to me that, like with Nikki Haley being belligerent against Russia, while Trump was promising to be friendly with Russia during the election, that maybe in the heart of hearts, Trump may be one thing, but he just really doesn't have any control. And adding to that, you have this... Bannon fellow, which many malign as a horrible person, but he, from what I've read about him and what he has said and done, is that he's a non-interventionalist. But now that he's out of the National Security Council, it just seems to me that the angle is to be further against Russia as well as the rest of a world that just wants to be left alone, like North Korea right here in Far East Asia. Now, if I have an advice to Trump or my own government here, is to just tell them, North Korea, that, yeah, you can just do your own thing. We're not going to threaten you and just leave you alone and rule yourselves. And that's what the North Korean government really wants. You know, you don't have to have a war. You just leave them be. It's kind of odd, but they can have their own fiefdom.
Well, we'll have to continue the discussion tomorrow because we're out of time for today. I do want to thank you for calling and contributing so meaningfully. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday, and all opinions are welcome. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And I want to tell you, this is, to me, having done this program today, I feel better about the fact that you're going to be listening very attentively about reports, listening to reports about Syria, and keeping in mind that the media, I mean, whether you go to ABC, CNN, whoever, they're getting their information from governmental sources, which is part of a large propaganda campaign. Now, it's not to say that indeed Bashar al-Assad is responsible. It's not to say that he couldn't possibly be responsible. It is that if you're going to do journalism independently, you're doing journalism, we should see the evidence of that. And if we don't see evidence of that, we should be very, very careful about consuming information just coming over the transom with all of the defects built in. Because really, there is a plan somewhere to make use of this opportunity, and even so that they actually create the opportunity to proceed with their plan. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.